You are back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and you were just listening to How You Know Peace by Time, a US-based rapper. And now we are really happy to have Fahima on the line with us. Fahima is a Malay Muslim woman living on the unceded lands of the Bidugal people in southeast Sydney. She's a registered architect and is currently working as a climate organizer with Move Beyond Coal, which is a movement that aims to phase out Australian coal exports by 2030. Welcome to the show, Fahima.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Now, Fahima, we actually met you at the Rising Tide blockade over the weekend, so it was really great to meet you and so many other climate campaigners there. And as a climate campaigner, we wanted to ask why you think it's important that people who support climate justice also stand up for Palestine. I mean, why do you think there are the connections between fighting for climate justice and standing up for Palestine?
Yeah, really great question. And I think to sum it up in a soundbite that I hope will sort of like stay with people and to resonate with them, or maybe we can start seeing this at both climate rallies and a Free Palestine rally, I'd say that climate justice is human rights. So what I mean by this is, you know, I'll give you an example. During the Voice to Parliament campaign, 43 climate organizations signed on to an open letter saying that the climate movement supports the right of Indigenous people to have a strong say in what happens on their country. And by saying this, we recognize the millennia of expertise in land management and protecting water, and we also form alliances with WOMP who are putting up fierce resistance against fossil fuel extraction on country. And this shows to me that the climate movement understands that the human rights of Indigenous peoples matter, and supporting self-determination is a part of the solution for a safe climate. But I think what I'm not seeing is this kind of understanding and solidarity being expanded to the Palestinian cause, and not just the Palestinian cause. You know, I'm thinking also about, you know, Uyghur Muslims in East Turkestan. And I think on Palestine in particular, the climate leadership has been largely silent on the struggles of Palestine and fencing the issue as scope creep or limiting what volunteers and staff can say about Palestine. But we kind of understand that the climate crisis is linked to every other injustice and systems of power. And we know that where there is injustice committed against people, the climate crisis exacerbated it. And if we want to be a climate justice movement, not just climate action movement, we need to stand in solidarity with the struggles for justice and liberation across the globe, particularly in the global south, because the global majority have done the least to cause the climate crisis, but, you know, we are copying it first, we are copying it hard. And we know that climate justice takes a people-centered approach, and it's not just emissions reductions and installing wind turbines and solar panels. We have to create a future of a just world with long-lasting peace. So that's why I say at the top that climate justice is a human rights issue. And to achieve this, to avert the climate crisis and uphold human rights, it will only happen through a broad global coalition that demands action from our government and corporations and civil institutions to do better. Australia, shamefully, is one of a handful of countries not calling for a ceasefire. And we have for a long time handed Israel a diplomatic blank check to do whatever it wants to Palestinian people and providing that immunity. So I'm seeing that this is causing fractures in the climate movement, and we need to be able to talk about this in terms of like how we kind of like keep the movement together, because this is a difficult issue for so many people, and the hurt is real. But we can't solve the climate crisis without solving the injustices on people everywhere. And there's also like a strategic rationale to this, because we've seen kind of vast sections of society really activated and mobilized for a free Palestine. Tens of thousands of people march every week throughout Australia. And the climate movement says that it wants to diversify. It recognizes that its movement is largely middle class, educated, older, and white, and what kind of like scratching their heads, oh, where are people of color? Where are Muslims? Where are people kind of in Western Sydney? And you can see that Palestine is an issue that a lot of these people mobilize around. So we need to sort of tap into that conversation. We need to start building solidarity and connections with all these issues, because I think when we have that strong network of allies, we can actually achieve really great things.
Sorry, I forgot to turn on my microphone. I think that's a great response to the question we kind of asked. And I guess our kind of next question you were going to sort of ask, I mean, you've kind of answered some of it already in your response to the kind of first question. But I guess one comment I just want to make is, I guess we're all part of Palestine Float on the Water, the Rising Tide Blockade, and we also took kind of an action, and of course we tried to frame it around this kind of slogan that I think Greta Thunberg, but I think someone else also came it, but Greta Thunberg had been popularizing it at a recent climate protest, which is no climate justice on occupied land. And I guess one of the things that has kind of happened around that has there has been a kind of bit of a backlash. I read this very long-winded article, which wasn't very good. It was a very bad article, actually. But it was basically launched this big attack on Greta Thunberg for even supporting Palestine. And they basically, the article basically made this argument that, you know, Greta Thunberg is splitting the climate movement and of course, this was an argument that was sort of framed around supporting Israel at the end of the day. But of course, there's probably a lot of people in the climate movement who are sort of trying to make these arguments that, you know, the two issues have, nothing in common, and, fighting for Palestine is a kind of distraction from the more important issue of the climate emergency. And I guess, I mean, as a climate campaign, I mean, how would you sort of strategically respond to those comments? And I guess I also want to hear your comments on, you know, what are some of the initiatives that we can take as climate campaigners and campaigners for Palestine that can actually naturally link the issue together? And of course, that's why I think we try to take that initiative at the Rising Tide Blockade to kind of link the issue kind of together.
Yeah, the Palestinian flotilla was one of my favorite parts of the weekend. So I'm really happy to be able to stand or float in solidarity with you all on the water. So let's talk about the climate crisis. And so we can't talk about the climate crisis without talking about emissions of greenhouse gases. So a couple of engineers from Jordan have done initial estimates about the carbon footprint of this war. So the emissions from IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces active warfare, since the war started in early October, is 60 million tons of CO2 equivalent in just the first month of the war. You can contrast that with Israel's reported emissions for the whole of 2021 is 54 million tons. That number just sort of like makes my mind spin. And if Israel continues its assault on Palestine well into the next year, the emissions from active war fighting is estimated to go up to over 600 million tons of CO2 equivalent. And this is similar to emissions of a large industrial nation like Germany. So while military emissions are not included in countries' reporting of emissions, war fighting is still releasing climate pollutants into the atmosphere. So for me, this brings up the very real barrier that we face right now in working towards a decarbonized world, where significant military and warfare emissions are unaccounted for. So when you think about it from this frame, I really think that waging peace is climate work. And then there's also the second issue of resource control. At the end of October, just weeks after declaring a complete siege and blockade on Gaza, Israel awarded 12 licenses to 6 companies, including BP and Eni, for natural gas exploration off the Mediterranean coast. And meanwhile, under blockade conditions, under occupation, Palestinians are restricted to waters within 20 nautical miles of the coast, and they have been prevented from developing natural resources within their own waters. And I mentioned the Uyghur people at the start of my segment, right? While the discourse in the past month has centered around Palestine, we know that similar state-sanctioned violence is being perpetuated on 11.8 million Uyghur Muslims in Turkestan by the Chinese government. East Turkestan is a large coal, gas, and minerals-producing region that's controlled by the Chinese government, and putting Uyghur Muslims under basically apartheid conditions. So we need to make this connection between sort of occupation, land rights, self-determination, and keeping fossil fuels in the ground. It's a very, very tricky, very complex question, but this is a huge issue. So you have another question about, you know, what we can do. I'd like to talk now about Adani. So the climate movement in Australia knows Adani through the Stop Adani movement. But for people who don't, Adani is an Indian multinational, you know, company, very, very influential, very, very wealthy, and they have opened up the Galilee Basin in central Queensland for coal mining on the sacred lands of the Whangan and Jangalingu people. And the climate movement, this is probably the most notorious sort of, I guess, figure within the climate movement right now. And we are making that connection that coal dug up on WNJ's land is kind of being exported to India, where Adani is displacing villages and indigenous peoples there for a land grab to build coal power plant that will kill people from air pollution and exacerbating the climate crisis. But Adani is also complicit in weapons business with Israel. It is a major shareholder in PLR Systems, that stands for Precise, Lethal and Reliable. And the other 49% of it is owned by Israeli defense manufacturer IWI. So there is a connection here between corporations that we know that are exploiting fossil fuel reserves here are also using their wealth, using their resources to develop weapons that are killing Palestinians. There is a digital action just launched last night from Stop Adani, so you can go to stopadani.com and take action, because we are calling out Australia's biggest super funds that are still investing in Adani. So I guess this is one way that our climate movement is intersecting with the boycott, divest and sanction movement. And we are calling out our own superannuation fund to divest from Adani, divest from coal, divest from weapons. I can share you the link if that's useful to your listeners.
Yeah, that'll be great. We'll share the link to that in our show notes. And we are about to wrap up the show, Fahima. It's been really great having you on, and thank you for talking a bit about Adani too and their support of Israel. I attended the webinar last night that you facilitated, organized by the Muslim Collective, where you are a co-president. And that webinar, for listeners, was on solidarity with Palestine, land and climate justice. And it was great. I did have to leave a bit early, but I did get to hear most of the speakers on the panel, which they were really informative. Some of them were artists, truth tellers, climate lawyers and campaigners. And they gave a deeper understanding for the need for intersectional justice for a safe climate and peaceful future. So thank you for organizing that one. And just before we wrap up the show, Fahima, did you have any final comments that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I think I like to say this to climate organizers and to Muslims who are kind of like motivated to take action on anything. You really don't have to do everything yourself. You don't have to fence yourself around things and putting barriers around issues, because they are connected. So even if you can't put a lot of time, a lot of your organizational resources behind supporting other justice-based issues, at least be open to keep talking and to keep listening and to keep learning about this all, because, you know, you never know what conversations you have with somebody that could change their mind and open their heart. And I think about shared liberation, right? Like, we are not free until we are all free. So please don't sort of fence your issues. Please, please, please keep thinking and talking about how everything is connected.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Fahima. And I think it's been a very informative interview, and I hope our listeners enjoyed it.
No worries at all. Thank you so much for having me.